Hey, welcome back to the Protectors Podcast. I am joined by a very special guest, David Burnett. Now, David's an author, but before that, he was a night stalker. We're going to get into that. David, how's it going tonight?
Good, Jason. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, brother. Besides little technical difficulties where we got on here, I'm doing great.
Yeah, good thing we were never in the comms department when we were in.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine that? So yeah, you were in, man. And I read your bio, private to night stalker. So what did you join the army for in the beginning?
So I was kind of trying to figure out my way through life. Did two semesters at college studying aviation technology, and kind of going toward that fixed wing commercial airline pilot path. And I realized that the rotary wing space intrigued me more than fixed wing. So I ended up enlisting in 08 as a Chinook helicopter maintainer. So I was primarily slated to work on the big giant flying school bus. And so that's kind of how my path started. And then after AIT, was with the detachment of 101st out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and did my first deployment with them about 3 months after arriving at that unit, and did a 13-month tour to Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan. And I was just working on the Chinook all day, every day, 12-hour to 16-hour days. And I often saw the role of a crew chief taking the helicopters out on mission that I had worked on. And so I felt unfulfilled in my obligation as working on the aircraft. I wanted to be flying on them. So that's kind of when I started to explore the options of transitioning and applying for 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment.
Well, that's a big change. You know, you go in and, you know, work on it, and then all of a sudden, hey, you know, I think I'll go SF. Well, Special Ops.
Right.
So, I mean, so, you know, I give a lot of credit for anybody that joined post 9/11, because you know you're going to war. And yeah, you pretty much go to war right away. Like 3 months is nothing. You don't even have time to like kind of get acclimatized.
Yeah, exactly. I still didn't know my ass from my elbow at that point.
So what was that like? So do you just go down to the, you know, I've been out of the game for so long. Do you just go down to the recruiter and say, hey, I want 160th. I want a reclass?
No. So it was kind of a different process for me. Had I been back up in the States, that might have been more of the path I would have been taking. But since I was deployed, I had to submit a lengthy application. And in order to submit it, I had to give it to my first line supervisor, and then he would take it up the chain of command. If everything looked good and everyone was on board with my decision, then they would send it to the recruiters back in the state. So after I submitted it, I ended up waiting about 2 months before I heard back and finally got the green light and found out I was going to 160th selection process as soon as I got back from that deployment.
Now, this selection process isn't like, you know, hey, you know what, you can count 2 + 2 = 4. This is a rigorous selection process. Were you ready for that, especially after spending so much time in country?
Yeah, I think mentally I was not ready for it, but physically, you know, I was young, and we were doing PT every day downrange, and I felt the physical aspect I could manage fine, but I wasn't prepared mentally after I started going through that selection process as to what was being thrown at us.
Well, how old were you?
So at that time, I was a specialist. By the time we got back from that deployment, I was 21.
I know, when you think of mental toughness, I'm like, when I was 21, it's like, I don't know if I was there either. So did you make it through the first time?
Yeah. So we started with 86 candidates for that selection process, that class. And then I think we graduated roughly less, just a little bit less than half of that class. And so I would see guys drop out for physical reasons. It was just too physically demanding, or they got injured and they had to get reclassed and start over in the next class. Or I saw guys just quit because of the mental aspect, and they just didn't want to continue with what the black shirts or the instructors were throwing at us.
Well, you know, if you're coming just regular from a line unit, you're not SF ready or special ops, and you go through a 5-week selection, was it like 5 weeks, like, you know, 7 days a week, or was it like a gentleman's course, gentleman, I put in quotes, as like 5 days a week?
Right. So it was 5 days a week. We had the weekends off, but it was far from a gentleman's course in that when you showed up at 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. Monday morning to get going, I mean, it was balls to the wall all 5 days. I think they gave us the weekends just to
recoup.
Yeah, recoup. And the main thing was to wash all of our stuff, because by the end of those 5 days through each week, we didn't have a clean pair of ACUs, or, you know, our stuff was all muddy or dirty. So really the weekends were spent recalibrating and readjusting our shot group, and then kind of getting all of our stuff cleaned and washed and ready for Monday to start again.
Well, you know, I'm glad you wrote this book, and I'm glad you're talking about this experience as a selection, because there is way more to special ops in general, you know, as a support package and everything else, and just pulling the trigger. You have this whole people like you that actually go through a selection. I don't think people realize that, you know, Night Stalkers have selections, just like the 75th and everybody else.
Yeah, I think a common misconception that, oh, they're, you know, 160 is just aviation support unit that supports the top guys in all of the U.S. forces. They don't have to go through a selection. But the bottom line is, if we're going to be up front where the fighting is hard with these tier one units, they want us to go through the same and similar training that the guys we have on board on our aircraft have gone through as well. So when shit hits the fan, they know that the crew on board has been through similar training, so they can rely on us just as much as we can rely on them.
Well, then historically, you look back at, you know, the famous Black Hawk Down, where you can get shot down, you can end up in enemy hands, and you need to understand fundamentals of combat, not just fundamentals, but to be able to operate if that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And those were some key fundamentals that we not only learned in the selection process, but continued to learn each month in follow-on training, you know, because we're constantly deploying and we have to be ready to go at a moment's notice. You know, we could get a call one evening and be out just outside of the base or eating dinner with our family. And then the next day we have to go out of country somewhere to go handle something. So you always have to be ready. And so the training was constant and continued well after that selection process.
Now, what was it like on your, now, were you eventually married, or were you kind of single this whole time you were with the SOAR?
Yeah, so when I first got into 160th, I was single, and then about 2 years in, I met a girl, and she was with me for three deployments, and then later on, well, we had been together that whole time, and then after the Army, I got out in 2014, and we got married in 2017.
Okay, so you lasted a little bit longer than me. I was a PB2, and my wife was a specialist. And we got married 6 months in. So good luck with that, brother. I mean, that's good that you made it through everything.
Yeah, I know. There's definitely trying times, especially, you know, when you're in a unit that's constantly deploying. It's like, you know, and that was one of my reasons for getting out at the end of my initial 6-year term, was to maintain the relationship I had with my girlfriend at the time, but I knew that she, you know, I wanted her to be my wife eventually. And I knew if that stood any chance, you know, I had to pursue something on the civilian sector.
Yeah. And as far as the civilian sector, I noticed that you're an author now, and that's why we're on here. So does that, like, while you were doing this military thing, while you doing college, because you and I kind of have the similar thing, you know, you do a couple semesters and then you join the Army. But in the back of your head, you always had this writing bug. Did you always have that writing bug?
No, I never did. I turned to alcohol as a coping mechanism when I got out of the military and struggled with it pretty significantly. And I detail that journey with it, which was a battle in itself, in the last chapter of the book. But I finally went to VA counseling, and through counseling and mentorship, I was told to write down anything I remember, what I was going through, and it'll help kind of alleviate some of the issues I was having. And I thought that was the dumbest thing ever. But at that point, I was willing to try anything. So I began journaling, and eventually those journal entries manifested into 20 to 30,000 words. And at that point, I kind of took inventory of everything I had written and realized it was kind of laid out chronologically of my journey in the military and then post-service. So I decided at that point, I'm going to compile all these journal entries and turn this thing into a book.
It's tough. You know, did they get back? You know, you find different ways to get rid of the demons, just to, you know, get rid of that adrenaline surge sometimes. And the writing really does help. And that's a great observation. You know, I never thought about, you know, doing the journaling and how much that could help vets out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been pivotal in my transition from action-packed military, dropping guys off in the middle of the night service, to mundane civilian life. And writing stuff down, as much as I don't want to relive some of the stuff that I do put down on paper, it's hard for me to get it on paper. But when it's out of my head and on a piece of paper, I don't know the psychological effect that that plays on the mind, or how it helps me so well. But I just found the writing aspect to be much more healthier and a better alternative than what I was doing in the past, which was drinking copious amounts of alcohol.
Well, then, you know, the other thing is, once you see your name on that paper, on that book, and knowing that your heart is into it, you know, it does kind of, in a way, replace that high of the alcohol. And it just, you know, I'm just, you know, speaking because that's kind of what it did with me a little bit. But man, it's a learning experience too, because now your words are on paper, your experiences are on paper. Now, if anybody else, it's almost like a recruiting tool for the SOAR. And are the Night Stalkers never quit, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like people want to know these stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, I get messages sometimes through different social media platforms that I have about how this book's being, this is like the one book everyone has in AIT, or everybody has this book in basic training or right before Green Platoon. So it's pretty, I don't know the feeling. It's pretty exciting and monumental, I guess, to hear people's reaction to the book and how it's being received, and how well people are liking it prior to going into that selection process, which I detail pretty significantly in the writing. So it's kind of interesting to start to get to hear feedback from people who I've never heard of before.
Yeah, it's a crazy feeling, man. I'm really excited for you. When did it come out?
So I self-published. It was at the Pentagon for 9 months getting reviewed, and the Pentagon redacted 20 pages, and I was able to finally put it out to the world December 12th, 2018.
Yep. Thanks to the Pentagon. You know, because I had a Jack Carr on a few weeks ago, and it was like, yeah, the Pentagon took that book for 6 months. And it's like, oof. Now, do you have plans to write another book?
Yeah, it's actually currently in the process.
Now, are you looking at fiction or nonfiction?
This is going to be a fiction book that utilizes some of the same characters from my first book. Whether people pick up on that or don't, you know, it's not going to change the outcome of the overall story of the second book. And I haven't really told anyone or put it out there publicly, the synopsis of it, but I'll just give you kind of a quick overview is that guys get out of a highly notable aviation unit and they transition into civilian life and, you know, all of the buddies kind of follow suit who were once active, and then they come up with a master plan to steal an aircraft and rob Fort Knox and get the aircraft back to base before anyone notices it was ever gone.
Yeah, I can see where that's coming from. That might be an interesting book.
Yeah.
I like it. You know, because anytime anybody's says, you know, steal anything from Fort Knox, I always think like the old James Bond movies and just the crazy capers. It's kind of a cool concept, something different.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a lot of interesting information on certain aspects that'll make this book, you know, really credible when it gets turned into a movie.
Well, as I mentioned to every author I've had on, check out Scrivener app. It's incredible for writing fiction, nonfiction, everything. It's incredible, man. So, now, what charities or anything do you support?
So there's a Special Forces founded organization that's helped me in other endeavors other than my book, and that's Warrior Rising out of Utah. And they help veteran entrepreneurs through mentoring and business plan development to create or continue to grow their startup. So heavily support them. And then another one would be Sentinels of Freedom out of San Ramon, California. And they provide service-disabled veterans with scholarships to make up the difference in certain programs that the VA GI Bill can't cover in full.
They sound like great. That's a great idea, you know, that there's so much that vets want to do to build themselves up that, you know, hey, they don't really want the handout. They want the tools.
Right.
That's pretty cool, man. So I'm going to definitely give them a shout out.
Awesome.
So is there anything else you want to throw out there? What do we got? Like projects, anything?
What I'm working on now, you know, I had so much irons in the fire when I had the book going that finally when I decided to put all my focus and effort on the book, you know, I was able to accomplish that. So one of those irons in the fire that I'm restoking, I'm focusing all my energy on that, is a quick-release mounting clamp that I patented and invented for government vehicles and aircraft. I'm currently working on developing that and working hand-in-hand with a Navy search and rescue training battalion. Currently, they're field testing them on their H-60 Pave Hawks. The feedback's been phenomenal, and we're just kind of taking that day by day as we prepare to submit a SBIR phase one proposal to the government for a potential big contract.
That is awesome. I love boots on the ground knowledge that actually comes into practical application like that.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And hopefully the rest of the DOD is just as excited as I am. And you know, I've been working on this thing for 5 years, so I'm ready to see it to fruition, just like I did the book, which took me 4.
I'm excited for you, man. You have a lot in your future. Fiction, you know me, I just love writing.
Right.
Fiction is perfect, man. and then having a business venture on the other side to keep that mind going, having like an adrenaline output somewhere is really good, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
I've been wanting to have you on the show for a while, and I'm glad you could make it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. You know, I always appreciate it when people reach out and want to help other veterans share their story. So, you know, I can't thank you enough, man. Appreciate it.
No, I definitely just, I love the support I get from the community. It's incredible. Well, David, I appreciate you coming on, brother.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, man. I can't wait to share this pod with other people and in my audience and get it out there.
Awesome, brother. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.